Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. Lisa Anderson here with you, and happy end of summer officially, as we're at the end of September. Later on for our inbox, we have a listener who thinks he's a little intense, and he wants to know what is an appropriate way to compliment women on their clothing. And I'm actually bringing in an HR professional for this one because, you know, I don't want to answer it. And so we're going to have a good conversation around that. And then for our culture segment, Thaddeus Williams is a professor. He's an author. He's really an expert in not only the Bible, but its effect on culture. And he's going to talk about really what it looks like to follow Jesus in a contemporary context. And so just a really neat, interesting guy. We're going to have a great conversation with him. Speaking of great conversations, here we are for our roundtable, and today we're just going to have fun. We are going to do an informal quiz of just all different categories with three unwitting suspects that we've pulled here into the studio. Okay. So we're going to have fun with this. We have Christina, Nate, and Rod. Hey, guys.
Hey. Hey.
All right. I did not give you guys any prep for this, and the only thing I said was just be warned, because as we were coming up with these questions, our team couldn't answer a lot of these, and so we're just like, whatever. But we thought it'd be fun. The whole reason this came about, I was telling you guys before we started taping, I've just been thinking lately about stuff where it's come up in conversation or as I've been reading, of just stuff that I feel like maybe I should know, but I don't know. And so one of those was like, yeah, why is it that we got in the Vietnam War? I don't really think I could answer that question. And what, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so we've pulled together a few different categories. And so we're just going to have fun answering some questions. This isn't for money. This isn't, I mean, you will be shamed on an international podcast, but you know, don't worry about it. Okay,
that's how you were going to ask about that, how to compliment a woman. HR question. I was like, yeah, no, just don't do it.
We
just
do.
Just don't back
if
away.
If we have
slowly.
Time, Rod, we'll circle back to that and we'll let you weigh in on it. So, but okay, we're going to get started. We have a few different categories here to include life skills, geography, history. We're going to talk about some biblical history, Christian history, technology, and then just pop culture. So kind of, you know, we're maybe not even going to get to everything, but we'll see how we do. And so here's the first question I'm going to throw out there. This is a life skills question, and I want someone to see if they can actually tell us how to do this. Can someone describe in three steps or... quite frankly, you can take as many steps as you want. But how do you sew on a button to a piece of clothing?
Oh, well, you have to...
Who knows? Does Christina know how to do this?
Well, here's the thing. My button popped off at work the other day.
Okay.
Ran to the bookstore, grabbed a little set. And then so you have to thread, of course, and then...
We have sewing kits in our bookstore, first of all.
That's what... It was their personal one.
Oh, someone had a personal one. Yes. That's good to know. Okay. Yeah. But go ahead. Continue.
Okay, you thread... your needle, then you're going to poke your needle through, and then you're going to put your one of your buttonholes on the needle, and it goes at the bottom, and you pull through, and then you start going in and out of every hole in the button.
Okay.
And you got to do a little knot at the end, right?
Yes, so, then you tie it and kind of sew it and put a little knot.
Okay, I'm going to be honest with you.
Check.
I feel like I have tried that before, and it does not work. Either I don't know if I've used too thin a thread. Like, sometimes the knot just goes through the fabric. I don't have a big enough knot. Are you doing it in an X across the holes? Because I've seen that on clothing. I feel like I don't have it. If there's one right way, you sound very confident in this. So we're just going to go with this answer and assume that that's okay. Do you regularly sew buttons on your clothing, you guys?
I have.
I have before, but not regularly, no.
Okay, because you're not just ripping them off.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay, who? Let's see who knows this. Maybe Nate or Rod can take a stab at this one. What countries, Nate, if you can name two or three countries that touch the North Sea?
The North Sea.
Yep. England?
That is one, yeah.
Scotland? I don't know if that's considered a country or not.
Yeah.
That's
a different
Norway?
Question. Is that a country? Uh-huh.
Denmark?
Yeah.
Belgium?
What?
Yep. Belgium is
all right. I know these are all right. I'm like, yep.
Netherlands? I don't know. That might
That's
be a little
correct.
Far south. There.
Netherlands is there.
Yeah. Does Sweden get down there and curve around enough or not? I'm not sure on
Sweden
that one.
I don't have Sweden on
okay.
here. Yep.
What else goes from there?
There's only a couple that you've missed, and I honestly would not have thought that these border.
Not Russia. Finland might. Over
I don't
the
think
top.
Finland. Okay. Nope. But two big ones, European countries. Kind of.
Oh, France and Germany.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah. I was going to say you don't have to get away from Scandinavia. Yeah. So, very good. I actually went to Norway some years ago. Probably did not even know where the North Sea was until I went there. So, that's sad. But I grew up in California, so we won't go there.
Google Maps.
That's, it was
travel the world.
It was pretty scary. Okay, this one anyone can take a stab at because we'll knock through a couple of these history kind of world history government kind of ones. Who can name any three international heads of state, not including the U.S.? Okay, Nate, give us one. Okay, Putin. Okay, can anyone else give us another one? A world leader.
The crazy guy in North Korea.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's good.
The Queen.
I thought you were going to say Dennis Rodman's friend. The Queen. The Queen. Like the Queen of
England. There
okay.
We go.
Yeah. Queen Elizabeth.
That's
three.
Okay. That is three. Boom. Okay, Nate, give us one more because we know that you know a couple others.
Oh. Darn. Right now, I'm going through a lot of prime ministers, which aren't technically head of state. They're head of government, so...
Okay, the fact that you even know that there's a difference between that, I did not even know that was different, because I was going to say, oh, yeah, what about Trudeau or some of the...
Well, technically, Queen Elizabeth is head of state in Canada. Oh.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying this for the benefit of our Canadian listeners. Hey, I remembered Trudeau, you guys. Give me credit. Okay, let's go to biblical history a little bit. Who can say how many years are there between the Old and New Testaments? The intertestamental period.
400?
Yeah.
Yep, about 400. So that's good. Yep, good answer. Okay, Rod, I know you know this one. Who founded Facebook? Come on.
I'm
You're
not
from
on,
Miami. You
yeah,
should be
but
running
I'm,
with this crowd.
I'm not on social media. Okay. I don't have Snapface or none of that.
Snapface.
You know, so.
Okay.
But yeah, it was Mark, what's his name?
Yeah, Mark.
Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good for not knowing anything about social media. That's good. Okay, Christina, you're young, but I'm going to give you this one. This is a tech one, too. When was the iPhone invented? The first iPhone came out.
In 2001.
Good guess.
The iPhone?
Yep.
The iPhone.
2003?
Nope, a little later. Keep going later.
It's like seven, I think.
2007. Really? Yeah. Yep. Yeah, 2007, which is weird because it doesn't seem that long ago, but that was 12 years ago now.
Well, they just keep updating it, so.
Yeah, I know.
What, number 27 now or something?
There's a lot of them. Okay. Okay, Rod, I'm going to make you take a stab at this one because this is, sadly, maybe you're in my era a little bit. What is the best-selling music album of all time?
Beatles?
Okay, let's not say we're in that era.
No. Oh, yeah, my bad. You prefaced that with our era. No, we're not.
Exactly.
We're not there.
But that's funny because a lot of people will say one of the Beatles albums.
Is it Michael Jackson Thriller?
Thriller, still? That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Thriller.
It is. Yeah. Michael Jackson
Beyonce
Thriller.
Beyonce just sold him out, I think.
Still, did she? Okay,
she
well,
might
still
have.
According to...
Beyonce, I'm not sure.
Oh.
Okay, it's still showing... online as Michael Jackson has the top spot with 66 million copies sold.
You remember when that video came out? That was pretty awesome. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Exactly. Okay. Let's go back to a life skill one. We're going to take these on again and see who can answer this. How many... Okay, let's have one of the... No, that's too sexist if I say that.
Back to HR.
They were just here.
That was going to be sexist, so this is open to anyone. How many cups are in a stick of butter?
I don't know.
Four.
Bake.
Four cups in a stick of butter?
I'm going to say half a cup.
Isn't it a half a cup per stick?
Yeah. Did I get that right?
You did.
Oh.
Right.
My wife
would
be proud of
you
that.
You know so much about butter. That's awesome.
I must be using a whole box.
Nate, you might want to rethink
you
your butter.
You can't go wrong with more butter, though. Let me tell you what you're baking.
Yeah. So. Half is in the standard stick, you know, and then people are going to argue, well, you know, some people do a different stick. Okay, whatever. Let's not even get into that.
Martha Stewart,
Yeah. Okay. Let's pop over to geography again. Okay, this one everyone should get. What language do they speak in Brazil?
Portuguese.
Very right, yes. Hey, Brazilian friends. We love you. Hi. Can anyone name three countries that are on the west coast of Africa? Because I could not name three. I got
Can I pull up Google Maps?
No.
No.
This is off the top of your head.
Côte d'Ivory or Ivory Coast or however they pronounce it is one of them.
Okay.
Morocco.
I'm just looking at my list again. Yes, that is correct.
And
Ivory Coast.
Togo.
Yeah.
It is Togo.
Togo is there. They didn't put Morocco, but when I did look at it, it's kind of like Northwest. So I'm going to give that to you. I would count that. Yeah.
I feel like we're on Jeopardy and Nate's definitely winning.
There are.
Yeah.
He is.
When she runs out of geography, I'll be quiet.
But remember, you knew a half a cup of butter, so you're okay.
I can go bake something now.
Okay. You're a better baker than I will ever be.
You're okay. I'm going to be honest, Christina, I felt like she was kind of bragging about her knowledge in this area, so we're going to give her a stab at this. Christina, I want you to tell us, why did Japan attack Pearl Harbor?
Oh, so Japan and...
She's all like
allied.
Talking with her hands.
They were ticked.
They were... allied with Germany. And when we were supplying weapons to France, Mr. Hitler did not believe that that was neutrality. So what he did was he ordered the attack on Japan with the leader at the moment. Somebody want to help me out?
Tojo was the prime minister of Japan during World War II.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so because there was no neutrality there, the Japanese attacked. Really, it was just because of the weapons that we were trading with the French.
Okay.
If that was...
That could be true. Okay, so that maybe is part of it. I just had to prevent the U.S. from interfering with conquests in Southeast Asia, which maybe is on top of
I
that,
guess
too.
Mine was... I just read a whole book about this. So
okay, well, we're going to give you credit for reading a book on it.
Why,
that's good. Yeah. Let's just say there's a variety of reasons. That was very good. Along the same lines, within history, we're going to go more ancient. What was the first civilization to create the first known alphabet?
No clue.
Sumerian?
It wasn't the Miami residents, right?
Sumerian?
Wasn't in South Florida.
The Sumerians, I think.
Okay. This one, I feel like I knew this, and I don't even know why I knew this. The Phoenicians.
Oh, the Phoenicians.
So,
way
back for sure. I'm not sure how I knew that.
Can we go back to baking?
We're going to circle back there. But first, what year did the Reformation take place?
Can I get a lifeline?
Calling Martin Luther.
Yes.
Calling Martin Luther.
1511?
You were so close. 1517.
17.
That was very good. Very good. 1517.
Yep. Good job, Nate.
The
good
Reformation.
I was going to say 1600, so I was a little bit off. Yeah.
Well.
Way off.
Okay, but that's okay. Good try. Who knows what Google's original motto was?
They have a motto?
That was my response. I did not know they had
Google
a motto.
It?
That's a good answer. No. Mm-mm. It's just weirder than that. It's super random. I kind of like yours better, Christina.
Oh, okay. Google. Sorry.
Original motto was don't be evil.
What?
Yeah.
Nah.
You kidding.
Who's your source?
Google.
My source is Tammy, our producer. So if you disagree, please write to Tammy at Tammy. No, just kidding.
Don't be evil? Seriously?
Yeah, I don't know. We got to look that up, you guys, and figure out why that
was. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a very current event. Who can give us the name of Kanye and Kim's latest baby?
Oh, it's Psalm.
Wow.
Oh, that's so bad that I know that.
It's a little boy named Psalm.
I love the name, though.
And he was looking so cute. He had a little gray fleece, like onesie on in an Instagram photo. But, Rod, you wouldn't know that
because
you're not
like,
on Instagram. That's
yeah,
too bad. Okay, well,
just
sorry.
It just so happens that I like that name. That's the only reason.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah.
I think it's super cute. So, okay, well, we're back to life skills. So, Rod, sit up straight. We're going to see how you do here.
Big as a cake.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Rod, you're going to get first take at this.
Right.
Name three cuts of beef.
Filet mignon, New York strip, and I was going to say carne asada, but that's just my preference.
Does that have butter or no?
Yeah, that's not a cut.
I don't know. Okay, so like, those aren't in the list. Like, that's what I would have said, too. But I don't know if that is, like, a specific cut.
Flank is
a
cut.
Yeah, flank. Yep.
Brisket.
Yep, brisket.
And
yeah, which is weird because I wouldn't have known. Like, I would have thought New York strip. That's what I would have considered. But, yes, flank and brisket. Any others you guys can think of?
Ribeye?
Rib.
Rib?
Yeah,
okay.
It says rib.
Rib.
I don't know the difference between rib and ribeye. Other common ones, chuck, loin, round, short plate, and shank.
Mm.
Oh, and flank. Did someone say flank?
Yeah.
Or shank?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
which carne asada is made with the flank, so.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, we wouldn't know because you didn't bring us any in. Next time, please do so. So
cook
we can
a steak and bake you a cookie.
With your butter. That would be awesome if you could. I would appreciate that. Okay. This is like international, but also U.S. and its current events. This is like everything in one. Who knows where the First Lady of the United States, Melania Trump, was born?
Not Romania.
Slovenia?
Slovenia
yeah.
is correct. I love how Tammy puts like the town here, like we're going to know that. Novo Mesto.
Yeah.
Tammy, that is very ambitious of you to think we would know that. Thank you. But no.
High bar.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay, back to we, and by we, I basically mean Nate, did well on the North Sea countries. Let's move to European capitals. Let's see, can we name some European capitals? Anyone who wants to throw one out? I'm like, I don't even have all these written down, so I'm like, I hope you're right, because I'm not sure I can check them all. If you give me obscure ones, I don't know. Is Paris the capital of France?
It
Paris?
I believe it is. Okay,
Madrid.
So Paris, we're good. Madrid, yep. Oslo.
Lisbon.
Norway. Okay, yep, good. There.
Berlin.
Nate, you're doing great.
I don't want to hog the question.
Go ahead.
London and Budapest
good.
And
yes.
Warsaw
yes.
and Prague and Moscow.
Okay, where, Nate, did you learn stuff? How do you know all this stuff?
I've always liked history and geography. And,
okay.
For some reason, that's information I can retain. Now, ask me to remember somebody's name 5 minutes after I met him. It can be kind of sketchy.
Okay. That's okay.
So bad.
We're going to take it back to the U.S. Rod, what document starts with when in the course of human events?
When in the course of human events?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask Nate to help me out with this one.
Christina, do you know?
What?
When in the course of human events, what document starts with that line? Or should I say,
I believe
when
Nate
in
would.
The course of human events? Okay, Nate.
I believe it's the Declaration of Independence.
It is, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We are doing so good, team. I'm so proud of us.
Yeah.
We're
doing great as
I
a team.
I wanted to make sure you knew that.
Oh, thank you.
Well, and
yeah.
it's funny because we always think of like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but we don't realize that's not exactly how that statement begins. It's when in the course of human events, blah, blah, blah. Interesting. So, okay. Let's run to another one here. This is also kind of a history one. What was debated in the Scopes trial, also known as the Scopes monkey trial?
Where did that take place?
Tennessee, 1925.
Could you use it in a sentence?
So-and-so ate a half a cup of butter during the Scopes trial.
I I think that was evolution being taught in public schools.
Mm-hmm.
Was the trial. Yeah.
So, yeah. So it was actually a teacher who... They were refusing to allow teachers to teach evolution. He did, and they ruled against him and then overturned it. And so a very interesting outcome to that that set precedent for what is taught in related to science in the U.S. public schools. So kind of interesting. All right, let's just finish it out with a pop culture here.
Is that Tammy again? We're... That's putting those in there?
Actually,
is there anything
about
the chopping wood or woodworking?
I think I came up with the Scopes trial one. No, but I do have... have you seen, Rod, any of the Lord of the Rings movies?
Yes, because my son loves them.
Okay.
I usually fall asleep halfway through.
Okay.
Oh,
can
no.
you take a wild guess as to when the first Lord of the Rings movie came out?
2014?
No.
2014. Do you guys want to...
2001?
Yeah, I'm going to say 2000, close to two. What he
I'm
said,
sorry, Joseph.
2002?
Yeah, it's 2001 is the correct answer, which seems crazy to me. That was so long ago.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's cloudy skies. Everything's dark.
Your life is just a blur, Rod, right now. I mean, you're struggling. It's okay. Does anyone know, just last one for fun, pop culture, what is the first YouTube video that reached 1 billion views?
Was it one of those whisper people?
I'm going to say, I'm going to go with a cat, a funny cat video.
I'm
a
funny
grumpy cat.
I know, grumpy cat sounds good. Wasn't there one with an egg that went really viral a long time, not too long ago or something?
I feel thriller, like I've seen that one.
Thriller?
Thriller?
Not thriller. The first YouTube video to reach 1 billion views was Gangnam Style.
Wow. Oh, Psy, yeah.
Yeah, Psy doing that, demoing that. So, all right, super fun, you guys. I think we can all agree, we're just going to go and read some books and troll some websites.
I feel so bad. I just finished a good book, too.
Well, Christina, you know some stuff about wars, so let's just leave it at that. That's
good.
I'm
glad Nate was here.
It's all good.
Appreciate it.
It's all good. Collectively, guys, I think we are very mediocre, so that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good job.
We hit the target.
Okay. Well, hopefully all of you listening had fun with us. Maybe we'll do it again sometime. Good job.
The enemy keeps talking, telling me to hide my face in shame. Whispering that everything I've done will drive the Father's love away. Saying it's too late for hoping that something in your heart could ever change. Oh, so I will fight the lies with the truth. Oh, keep my eyes fixed on you. I will sing the truth into the dark. I will use my
Well, hey, folks, we're here for this week's culture segment, and I get to talk to a new friend here, Dr. Thaddeus Williams, who that name is just super pretentious. but we know he's going to be a fun guy regardless. So welcome, Thaddeus, to the show.
That's the Reverend Dr. Thaddeus Williams,
just to
add to the pretentiousness.
Please tell me you've at least gotten a few nicknames in your time.
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
No doubt.
That's good to know. Okay, I feel better about that. So
I'm wearing a monocle right now and eating caviar, if that helps.
I was kind of wondering. So, yeah, with that, you've got your pipe and you're sitting in a darkened library. Yeah. Excellent.
Many leather-bound books, yeah.
Well, it's funny. We do have to kind of break it down here because what we're going to be talking about today, you actually have a book titled Reflect, Becoming Yourself by Mirroring the Greatest Person in History. And I like the book because we're going to talk about big stuff, but you break it down. Now, you do use some old and some dead dudes to support your claims, but we're going to be okay with that. And talk about what it actually means to be Christ-like in the 21st century.
Yes.
So, okay. Now, I don't even know, you had something like 700 people endorse this book, so I can't even like go through all these names of like...
It was 2,500,
Did any of these people actually read it?
95% of the book is endorsements. Well, the book is only about three paragraphs long.
That's good. That's why I was kind of wondering about that, but it's cool. Well, and along in that vein, we're going to kick it off by talking about Calvin, because one of the things that you reference him is his idea of, you know, talking about how really in practice we're all idol factories, and you are no exception. In fact, I think you laid out about seven or eight areas in which you have built up idols and had to systematically knock them down. So let's talk about that a little bit in the idea of, you know, every single one of us who claims Christ does not want to be an idol factory. We all say we want to worship Jesus and follow him, but practically speaking, we are just propping up the things that we choose to reflect and worship instead. Why such a slippery slope? What is, address the problem here?
Yeah, I think Calvin hits it on the head when he says in the Institutes that the human heart is an idol factory. If you doubt that, just hang out with me for a day, and you'll see very quickly, like, we are idolaters at heart. We like to, we're constantly churning out something to make supreme. If you pie chart out your thought life, the question is, what gets the biggest slice? That might be a romantic partner, it might be a house, it might be a paycheck, it might be a public image, it might be stuff and brands. There's all kinds of things that can easily nudge Jesus off center stage that we start being more consumed by. And this has been going on for thousands of years. I mean, read the Old Testament, they would bow down to a rock. They would bow down to anything and everything but the creator of the universe. And so where I'm starting the book out is to say, look, we're all worshiping something. I taught atheists for over 10 years in the academic world, and I never met a true-to-the-core atheist. They were all on their knees to something or someone. And so where I'm going is to say, look, in Psalm 15 it says, not only is everybody worshiping, but we're all becoming like what we worship. Mm-hmm. For better or worse. And so if I worship a product, if I worship stuff and name brands, I will become as heartless, as dumb, as soulless as the products I'm bowing down to. If I worship a romantic partner, I will lose myself, become that person's clone. I'll start dressing the way they want me to dress and watching only the movies they want me to. Like, I will lose my identity in that process of worshiping someone. And so I'm asking that question, what does it mean to not just say we worship Jesus, that's easy, but to actually worship Jesus? If we're really doing that, we should find ourselves becoming like him across lots of different dimensions that I explore.
Yeah. Well, and it looks like, I mean, I would say definitely, especially in Western culture, we're so compartmentalized. You know, I think we've grown up in church and Sunday school, and it's all about having your quiet time and you carve out some time for Jesus. But then the rest of your day is given to work, bills, social media, entertainment. What's your argument for how we are going to prioritize Christ with such competition just for sheer time in our day?
Sure. I mean, we tend to think of it as a pie, and I got a big slice for my work life. I got a big slice for family, a big slice for Netflix binging, right? We all have, like, these things that we partition our day out and say, this gets X amount, that gets Y amount. And kind of the leftovers, you know, Jesus gets a little sliver. And when I was operating on that assumption, I was thinking, okay, my goal today is to give Jesus a bigger piece of the pie. And the truth is, he doesn't want a bigger slice of pie. He wants the whole pie. He wants all of us. He wants to declare his lordship over every square inch of our lives, our work lives, our vegging lives, like everything. Jesus, it's properly his. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I think about it, is it's not so much a question of how do I give Jesus a bigger slice, but how do I bake Jesus into the entire pie so all of it's his.
Yeah. Okay, so one way, I mean, one thing I want to draw attention to is the fact that the title of the book, Reflect, is actually a cool acrostic that the letters stand for reason, emote, flip, love, elevate, create, and transform. And I want to ask you, okay, in doing, because surely you sat down with this chart, what, which of these areas would you say you've had to grapple most with, both in doing the book and just the in the area of every aspect of your life, what crops up for you most, and explain it a little bit?
Yeah, that's a hard question because I've pretty much mastered all of them.
Yeah, well, there is that. I'm there too, but, you know, for the others that need help, yeah.
For the others. No, I mean, it really is kind of a seven-way tie for me in terms of areas that I'm not like Jesus. reasoning like Jesus, I mean, I'm a theologian. I get paid to think about Jesus, which is an amazing gift. So that one, you know, that's 40 hours a week for me. I would say the E, emoting like Jesus, that's probably my biggest struggle, is because, you know, I tend to have a big head and I have to use big words to get paid. And but when it comes to feeling what Jesus feels, when it comes to being outraged at what outrages Jesus, having my blood boil at the things that boils his blood, when it comes to enjoying what Jesus enjoys. If you read the Gospels, Jesus's deepest sense of joy isn't having everybody like him. It's not getting a fat paycheck. It's not status. His deepest source of joy is his connection moment by moment to the Father. And that's something I struggle with. Looking not only at what outraged Jesus, not only what Jesus enjoyed, but the most often used emotional term for Jesus' emotional life in the Gospels, like a distant first place, is compassion. And it's one of my favorite Greek words, splenkizomai, which means your guts twist when you see people suffer. And that is something that I'd like to say I have a tiny bit of the compassion Jesus feels, but truth be told, I'm light years away from where I need to be. And so for me, that's the biggest struggle, is how do I feel what Jesus feels? And so I talk in chapter 2 about the need to have what C.S. Lewis called just sentiments, having our feelings fit reality. They do justice to the object felt. And what C.S. Lewis calls just sentiments, the Bible calls the fruit of the Spirit. We want to feel love and joy and peace and patience, kindness, goodness, self-goodness, all that stuff the way Jesus does. And the truth is that is fruit of the Spirit. And if I could just dork out for 20 seconds on the Greek here, it's actually, it's written in the original, it's fruit produced by the Spirit. So the realest love I can experience, the realest love you can experience, the realest love listeners can experience, isn't produced by us, it's produced in us by the Holy Spirit. The greatest joy we can experience isn't produced by us, but in us through the power of the Spirit. The greatest peace we can experience isn't produced by us, but in us by the Holy Spirit. So that's where I've been focusing, you know, lately, is recognizing just how out of whack my heart is with Jesus' emotions, and inviting the Holy Spirit to do some transforming work there.
Yeah, for sure. What, you know, one of the sections of the book, you talk about power, and you actually say Jesus doesn't remove our desires for power, pleasure, and purity. He redeems them. And I want to ask you, first of all, how he does that, or I'm going to ask you how he does that. But first, you also make the argument that real power, because I think the culture is telling us, you know, you've got to get your own, you know, you've got to fight your way up, whether it's the corporate ladder or whatever. And you actually make the argument that real power is empowering others. Explain that for us.
Sure. That's all coming out of John 13. So it's a famous scene we're probably all familiar with, of Jesus sitting down. It's night before his execution, and the Lord's Supper happens, right? They're having their Passover dinner, and Jesus stands up and removes his outer clothes and dresses up like a slave, like a first century house slave. And then he stoops down and washes the feet of some fishermen and tax collectors. He gets down in the dirt and the grime and serves them. And here's the fascinating thing. I learned that story as, oh, how humble of Jesus. He's giving up all that power. He's the creator, sustainer of the entire universe. And here he is on his hands and knees, dressed like a slave, scrubbing, you know, the grime between the toes of a bunch of first century fishermen. How humble of him. But rereading it, if you look at John's account in John 13, he doesn't frame it that way at all. The prelude to that whole story is John says, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands. And hands, if we were to hop in a time machine and more back to the first century, hands are a symbol of power in first century Judaism. And so John is telling us all things are in Jesus' hands, right? He's got the whole world in his hands, like he's sovereign. He's king of the universe. And so then he tells the foot washing story, not as here's Jesus emptying himself of power, but this is what real power looks like. Real power stoops down and lifts people around you up. And that is just so radically countercultural. Because our culture, a lot of the church culture, even if we're honest, is based on a kind of zero-sum game, where if I want to lift myself up, I got to put people down. And Jesus just flips that around and says, that's not the way the universe works. That's not the way power works for me. That's not the way power works even at the very beginning of the scripture, right? The whole opening of the Bible is God being powerful, speaking the universe into existence. And then he creates image bearers, and he's not like threatened, like, oh, no, if I give them power, I'm going to lose some. He shows true power by empowering his image bearers to make something of the world. And so I think that's a good starting point for thinking biblically about power that's super countercultural, especially these days.
Yeah. Well, and also I'm just reminded of him saying, you know, no one takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own accord. And that idea of choosing, choosing to do that as an illustration of that.
Sure. And think of it this way. Like I just yesterday was sitting down, you know, my wife and I have four little ones. And my eight-year-old wants to learn guitar. She saw some episode of whatever, and she's like, I want to be a rock star, so-and-so. And so I sat her down, and I taught her a few chords. Now, I didn't lose power by giving her a new power to play, you know, a few new songs. If anything, I gained a little power. I got a little better by having to teach it, you know? And that's the way power actually works in God's universe. When you give it away to lift people around you, to elevate them, they gain power and so do you. So power isn't this zero-sum, winner-take-all, push others down so I can lift myself up kind of thing in the way that we see Jesus express it throughout the Gospels.
Yeah. Okay, so I want you to kind of take this a little bit in our remaining minutes here to the practical, because again, you know, we're talking to young adults who are just barely trying to keep their lives together, and then we're trying to exhort them to, you know, I mean, you're basically throwing down the chief end of man here to glorify God and enjoy Him forever.
Yeah.
You know, and you even say, you know, we shouldn't want gifts more than the giver. But talk to us about what, okay, that's easy for us to say, but give us a couple baby steps for the young adult who is like, when I finish listening to this podcast, I want to look back on my life 3 months from now, next year, whatever, and realize that I'm understanding this and I'm applying it. What are a couple baby steps for us to take all of this and be like, yeah, this is what this looks like in my crazy daily, weekly life right now in the 21st century.
Sure. So 2 Corinthians 3 is a passage that comes to mind. In verses 17 and 18 of 2 Corinthians 3, Paul writes, he says, now the Lord is spirit. Where the spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom. And we all with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. This comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. And so Paul isn't saying, he's not laying a guilt trip on people and saying, if you want to be more like Jesus, here's 50 rules you got to keep, here's 613 Old Testament commands, you know, get it together, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, you have to micromanage every area of your life. He's saying the way we transform from glory to glory, the way we take on more of the weightiness and radiance of Jesus is by beholding him. There's something in beholding Christ that leaves you in awe. There's a sense of reverence and awe. Wow, Jesus is way better than career success. Jesus is way better than this or that romantic partner. Jesus is infinitely better than this or that product. Jesus is way better than this or that political ideology. Something to beholding Jesus in the scriptures that's captivating. You see him and it dawns on you there really is truly nothing like him. And so I would say really practically, that's where I would start is, am I on a daily basis beholding Jesus in scripture? You know, there was a big study that came out, this is almost 7 or 8 years ago now, that was trying to gauge what, more than anything else, causes significant spiritual growth, whether we're talking about, you know, rookie believers, brand new babies in the faith, or seasoned veterans. And so they gauged, you know, is it being connected to a small group? Is it having some charismatic, mic-dropping pastor that you listen to once a week? Is it phenomenal podcasts like Boundless, which was second place. It was up there. It was right there, close number two. Uh-huh. But what they found was just reading the Bible, just reading and beholding Jesus in the pages of Scripture was the number one factor in significant spiritual growth across the board from brand-new baby believers to the seasoned veterans of the faith. So I would start there. And when you do that, when you start in Scripture, you start to see Jesus who isn't just saying, be a nice person. He's not just saying, be kind. There's so much more to him, and that's what I try to explore, is if we're worshiping and becoming like him, we're going to start reasoning like him. Our intellectual lives are going to expand. Our emotional lives are going to start to reflect him more. Our actions, our relationships, our imaginations, all of it. And so that's my number one takeaway is spend a lot of time in the text getting to know Jesus and watch how that reshapes the whole person.
Yeah. So kind of just in tandem with that, and this is a, you know, probably a less important question, obviously, but in light of what you just said, what about everything else that we see being discussed in the church today? So we are in like just full on skirmishes that involve engaging the culture, how we do worship, women's roles in the church, Twitter throwdowns on any number of interpretations of lesser issues and stuff. It just makes me say, like, do we just need to all, like, get off of social media and go, like, be in a, you know, I just don't understand how we can have our fingers in all these pies and still be effective, because it just seems like as Christians, we're getting into some of the lesser things, you know, to our own demise.
Sure. Well, I have two thoughts. Number one is, the best news in the universe is that God saves us not by our performance, not by us measuring up to a mile-long list of do's and don'ts, not by us getting everything right and crossing every T and dotting every I theologically. God saves us by grace and grace alone. We are saved beginning, middle, and end by the grace of God. Now, in the age of social media, there's a lot of great content out there from all kinds of different ministries that might be, you pull up your news feed and it says, you know, 10 rules for loving Jesus while single, and here's 10 things. And then you're scrolling through and the next article is 10 ways to think biblically about alcohol consumption, and then the next article is, you know, 10 ways to, and there's a kind of...
I think I've written all those posts, by the way. I think
they're all great.
I have written all those. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
And there's something to all of that. There's no doubt that, like I said before, Jesus wants to be Lord over all of us, over what we drink and over our finances and fill in the blank. He claims all of it. But what I've noticed in ministry the last few years, the spike of social media, is it can create this sense of, oh, I'm so inadequate. Like, I read that list of 10 things, maybe I'm doing 3 of them, and there's 100 more lists right behind it. So how can I keep up? Am I thinking biblically about sexuality? Am I thinking biblically about the definition of marriage? Am I thinking biblically about racism? Am I thinking biblically about abortion? It's just like, there's almost a crushing weight to all that. And I just want to say the list is loud and clear. You are loved by the creator of the universe, not by your obedience to a single factor on any of those top 10 lists, but solely by the grace of God through Jesus and his substitutionary death. And when we start there, now we can engage all the other truth out there in a way that's less, we aren't coming from an insecure dread. It's not coming from a place of doom and can I earn love or earn salvation by keeping up with all this. That's the first thing I would say. The second thing, you know, we need to be preaching the gospel to ourselves every day, in other words. The second thing is, with a lot of these other issues, whether it's gender roles in the church, whether it's what do you do politically, where do we stand on Donald Trump in the White House, all this stuff that's constantly blowing up our news feeds, what I found is that if we keep first things first, oftentimes we get exponentially more clarity on all these other issues. And so let me be really specific here. When it comes to politics and hot potato issues of the day, if we're starting with, I want the world to like me, I want to be relevant, I don't want people to look at me like I'm some kind of Jesus freak, then we're shaping our view of some really big questions about human nature and marriage and gender and sexuality and race, all that. We're being shaped by the culture. If we put the first thing first, if we start with, who is Jesus? How do we meet him in Scripture? How can I live a life of reverence before him? How do I really make him my first thing, my number one priority, so that he's not just the biggest slice of the pie, but the whole pie is his? I find that we get a lot more clarity on all the issues that everybody's yelling about on Twitter and Facebook all the time.
Yeah, so true. And I think what you put forth in the book is really a just a great example of that, and really boils it down. Okay, so the book is Reflect, Becoming Yourself by Mirroring the Greatest Person in History. We've been talking to Thaddeus Williams, and hey, I just want to thank you for giving us, well, one, for writing this, because this is a great starting point, I think, for a lot of us that are wrestling with this and want to do all the to-dos, but have to realize that that's not where it's at. And like you said, I liked what you said about the slice of the pie versus really giving God supremacy over every area of our life. So folks, we have the links on our site. This book, actually, we want to make available to you in exchange for a gift of any amount to Boundless. And you know that the content we provide here is all as a result of the generous gifts from our audience peeps. We love you. And so just go to boundless.org. You will see the show there. Click on the resource, a gift of any amount to Boundless, and we're going to put this book in your hands. So Thaddeus, thanks so much for being part of this today.
Thanks so much for having me. That was so much fun.
We buried dreams, laid them deep into the earth behind us, said our goodbyes at the grave, but everything reminds us. God knows we ache when he asks us to go on. How do we go on? We will sing to
As we finish out the show, as we always do, we are answering our inbox, a listener question. And today's kind of a fun one because we thought it might actually merit an HR professional. So we brought Jen in. Hey, Jen.
Hey, great thanks to for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, this is interesting. It's from a guy, one of our listeners, and I'm just going to read it and then we're going to see what you have to say. He says, when is it okay to compliment a woman on her dress? As a single guy, I struggle with this. I also have a more intense personality, which makes it more difficult. Is this something that is appropriate between people who aren't in a relationship? Is it something I should work on, or should I just steer clear of it to avoid confusion or awkwardness? I think it's interesting because I'm going to add this here before you start answering. The reason we thought this would be a good HR question, because quite frankly, sometimes there maybe are just appropriate and or even legalities to keep in mind. But we will, whether you're at work, whether you're at church, whether you're whatever, you just go ahead and give us the scoop.
Well, when I think about it, Lisa, I have to break it down outside into those different components.
Yeah.
So the first thing, let's talk about at work, because sometimes you might see someone, they're dressed really professional that day, you want to comment on it. And really, across the board, what I would say is a lot depends on relationship. So if you have a great relationship, maybe even what you would consider a friendship with someone, something could be taken really appropriately by you complimenting someone's dress. If it's a conversation starter, especially at work, I wouldn't go there.
Yeah,
I think it's really important in the professional environment to keep your conversations professional, especially if you think it's going to become a little bit awkward. So, for example, one time I did come into work and a married coworker winked at me and told me that my dress looked nice. Now, I knew this person. I'd worked with the person for a while, and I knew that he genuinely just meant that as a nice compliment. Even still, I was a little bit uncomfortable with that comment. He's married. I'm single. Is there some sort of underlying meaning behind that? And it just didn't feel appropriate for the workplace. So my recommendation at work is just don't talk about it. If somebody looks especially nice, say something about their character, something about their performance, something that has to do with their job rather than trying to talk about their appearance, because in the end, they might think you're trying to ask them out on a date. That may not be appropriate in the workplace either. At church or at an event, again, consider the relationship and then speak out of that relationship. If you don't really know the person, you might ask some other questions first and get to know them before you start talking about their physical appearance. Anything you can do to create a camaraderie and something that's comfortable to talk about is a much smoother way to go than to start talking about someone's dress.
Yeah. It's so funny you say that, because I feel like any awkward person that has ever been within 200 feet of me, I have probably had a conversation with, because I can remember many of those conversations. And I felt like even at the in the work thing, because I thought, you know, well, you know, it's always nice to be complimented. And it's almost like for me, it was the difference between if someone says, oh, I really like your jacket, or something, it's depersonalizing it and like, that's okay, but you look really great in that jacket kind of starts, you know, towing the line and stuff, where you start making the comment is about the person and the way they look,
right,
or their body or their, you know, whatever. That's kind of where I think especially for women, you know, they can easily get creeped out. And it's just, you know, some people can come across super suave and make it work. Other people can't. You probably don't know which one of those you are.
That's right. Exactly. so you may not want to take that risk.
It's all
again, worth. Especially in the workplace.
Yeah. And that can just be, I mean, I've even heard people do it like trying to get points with their boss, and they're like, oh, I'm going to make some super personal comment, and it backfires.
It doesn't go well. I was literally just talking to our general counsel, so a lawyer, and I was telling him I was going to talk about this, and he said, yeah, one time I made a comment about someone who was an administrative assistant in his area, and the next day he was in human resources, and he said, I sincerely just wanted her to know I thought she looked great.
Oh.
And he said, it's always better not to talk about it at work.
Yeah, better safe than sorry. So, well, Jen, thanks so much for weighing in on that.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week's show. As always, we do want to hear from you. So write to us at editor@boundless.org, even if you have an awkward dress code question or something that we can help you with as you're navigating life in the workplace and beyond. But otherwise, we will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.